It's Tuesday, May 12th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 367 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 4 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
This is Brodor.
And this is Chris. Brodor, it's our first time together.
Yeah, I did not realize how old you actually were until I saw your picture on the computer.
Oh, just a little bit ago?
Yeah, just a little bit ago. That's the first time I've actually seen you.
So, Chris, you know how there's that Microsoft thing out there right now where it tries to like guess your age based on a photo? Oh,
yeah, the NSA software?
Yeah, whatever it is. Have you put your picture into that?
Absolutely not.
Okay, I'm going to do that.
Your voice is much younger, though. You sound a lot younger than you look.
He's had years of practice.
He certainly couldn't sound older than he looks.
True. Time just doesn't go that far. Yeah.
People that old don't have voices anymore.
They don't have bodies anymore. They've gone
just
to
like the
dust.
Rest of me works out, my vocal cords work out as well.
It just be the slow release of digestive gases.
Oh, it's not slow when it's Chris.
So Fear the Con 8, fearthecon.com. We'll put that in the show notes. Be sure to sign up. We know you're going to be there, because if you aren't, that's just sad. That's really just sad, because you can't claim it's because of the cover price.
I want to run a game without rules. Just, it's going to be called You Tell Me. Here's the You Tell Me system. What happened? I don't know. You tell me.
I think Chad's already doing that one.
Technically, that's called Inspectors, but I was in a game a couple years back with Mikey Mason, and Mikey, he likes rules and stuff. I don't know if he's like super crunch guy, but you know, he likes systems and that sort of thing. He sat down with us and he's like,
great,
okay,
comic book character, super crunch guy,
super crunch
like
guy,
a serial superhero.
So he's like, he has this thing. It's based on this book series that he read and such. And he's like, okay, you know, I can do like, I guess Savage Worlds or something with this. But, you know, I was thinking about doing no rules, just off the cuff, no rules. What do you guys think? That's really outside my comfort zone. I'm like, dude, do it. It's so freeing. It's like running around without underwear.
All right, there you go. Then I am going to run my gore game, and that's going to be it. It's going to be the You Tell Me system gore.
It's going to be a system on how much can you eat a car. That is right, how you succeed.
Precisely.
Now, there is a better system than no rules at all. There's the D. Wayne system that Dan ran a few years ago.
That was last year.
The D. Wayne system is Dan ran a game called Gingers Have No Souls, and I was the system. You can bribe me. So I got the Lego Lex Luthor in the big suit, and
I got a bunch of cookies.
Yeah, I got sugar-free cookies. And
see, you can thank. I don't know if I ever told you this, Wayne, but a lot of people in the game reached out to me and said, "What does Wayne like? I want to bribe him, but it has to be good bribes." And I started.
I had Superman, some great bribes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, he likes snacks and stuff, but, you know, it's got to be sugar-free stuff,
the most profitable game system I've ever been a part
of. So it wasn't...
I want to see a bunch of people named Dwayne do the Dwayne system.
Basically, Dan would just turn D-Wayne. To me. Dan would just turn to me and say, okay, is it successful? And then people would give me stuff.
That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they would give me stuff to say no to other people.
I'll let you guess why there's no deep hat system.
Because nobody's going to drop a digit or give a handy.
Because it's a family con?
Because it's a police substation. Which, by the way, it is. For anyone who's never been to our convention before, we hold it in the community center for Maryland Heights, which is a municipality in western St. Louis County. And a couple of years, people have asked us, like, well, what's security? And it's like, well, that same building houses a police substation.
Yeah. And not like a gas station, you know, where they give them free donuts and they put a sign up that says, I mean, it's like...
They have offices in there.
I'm sorry. Does the convention need security?
No.
Not really.
Yeah, we know. It's fine. But
well, it will now. When people are bowing down to the Reagan scalp and they're we're drinking and I've got a vomitorium right next to me. No Game Master screen, no dice, but everybody has their own personal vomitorium.
So when Brodor shows up with about 10 or 15 sexecutioners, then the police are going to get called.
The police will be on hand. And wearing his gigantic shoes and monster mask,
Brodor's? No, the mask and the shoes are not the problem. It's the cuttlefish of Cthulhu.
So that's you the guys problem. Saw they have a female guitarist now, right?
The female lead singer.
Yeah. Oh, it's female lead singer.
Their lead singer, their lead singer died. Yeah. Yep. So now she doesn't wear the enormous phallus that ejaculates substances all over the audience. She actually shoots it from her mammalian protuberances. Yeah.
Her breasts shoot blood all over people.
I have to say, if you've never been to a GWAR concert, you are missing out. You don't even have to like their music. You don't even have to like that type of music. The showmanship is amazing. And they are actually really talented musicians, too.
All right. So, Brodor.
GWAR.
Brogwar. Last episode, Chad was telling a story about going into a game store.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was in there, he wanted to buy some stuff. Quick recap for anyone that didn't hear the last episode. And he was pretty roundly ignored by the person behind the counter. Now, for anyone who also has not been following the show, Brogwar is the manager of a multi-location chain of stores within the St. Louis area. Does a very good job with it.
Comic and role-playing store.
And Chad said, screw you, I'm going to take money out of your kids' pockets, and I'm going to go to another place.
All right, let me... All right,
well, hold on. There's a structure to this show, because I'm here. Excellent.
You need to keep that
I think I will keep that one in. Usually edit that out. But, so, here's my question. I got a couple questions for you, but let's start with this one. If you were in Chad's situation, what would you have done?
All right. There's basically two Brogwars, right? There is the reasonable, rational, I run a small business for a living. And
I'm asking the other one because I'm going to come back to the first Brogwar in a minute.
Well, not too terribly dissimilar from what Chad did, except for I would have said something to the clerk. I would have put my stuff, instead of putting it away back on the shelf, I would have put it on the counter and said, look, man, you know, I understand that you've got other customers to help, but I wanted to buy this. But now the only power I have in this relationship is voting with my dollars, and I elect to not give them to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I probably would have called, since that particular location, I'm actually friendly with the owner and the store manager. We've got a good relationship, as good as two competitors could have. And I would have called him and said, hey, man, I just wanted you to know this is the situation that occurred with your employee.
That was going to be my next question, is asking Brodor, the shop manager.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I went into a fantasy shop location and that kind of thing occurred. Now, on the one hand, as a consumer, obviously, I want better service than that. That's not the right way to do business, so on and so forth. But on the other hand, as Chad pointed out, it's not my job to train your employees. And on top of that, you know, maybe they're just having an off moment. Do I really want to be the dick who goes running, getting them in trouble with their boss? Wouldn't it be better, just from a human perspective, just to stay chill about it, walk out the door? As a store manager, what would you do? Or if you want to look at it another way, let's say that happened to me in a fantasy shop, what would you want me to do?
I certainly would want to know about it. Because so here's the situation. Because I'm friends with the owner of that store, I have struggled with, do I want to reach out to him and say, by the way, I have a customer who brought to my attention an experience that they had in your store that wasn't positive, and here's the situation. I know that he would want to know about that situation because I know that he would want to correct it. Because it really does boil down to, we all have a bad day.
Yeah.
We all have times where we're off of our game, and he wasn't at his best that particular moment. Well, so the question becomes is that employee always behaving that way, or were they just having a bad day?
Yeah. Is it a one-time thing, or it's a trend?
Right.
And we had this conversation in the car of, I knew instantly what shop Chad was talking about as well. And I've had horrible experiences lately, and I used to have very positive. It has gone downhill. And in this case, I haven't seen the owner in there in a long time. So I think this is a case of, I think the owner may not know what's happening in his shop
anymore. And that's possible. And I think my stroll there. And
but I'm not an investor in the store. So it's not my responsibility to.
It's not your responsibility.
But I see where you're coming from, because you know the guy.
Right. Yeah. However, I feel like, to a certain degree, as a consumer that I have a moral obligation to shame the individual. Well, no, I'm serious. Yeah. To shame the person who has done me wrong and say, look, I'm a consumer. I deserve a certain level of treatment. Mm-hmm. You have not provided that treatment. To go back to your question, honestly, I can't fix it if I don't know about it.
Yeah.
So if that happened in one of my stores, Chad was joking about how he would have called me. Honestly, an email, a phone call. I mean, I don't want you to thrash them right, you know, right in front of them.
Do you know who I am? Yeah. Do you know who I know?
But no. I would love to be able to go to that employee's manager and say, hey, by the way, a buddy of mine was in the shop and this is the experience that he had. I have fired employees because that was their consistent level of performance. And that's one of the reasons why we have, I like to think, improved as a business over the years is that we don't tolerate that kind of behavior anymore.
And here's my sort of edge with that. And I get that. I agree with it. I get it. You have a bad employee. You train them. You try and work with them. You discipline them. And there comes a point where, you know, the relationship isn't working out. My issue is there have been two times in my life where I have been scary unemployed. Like, oh, my God, we are going to lose everything. I'm the sole source of income. This is scary unemployment time for over an extended period of time. And, I don't want anybody's job.
Well, and that right there is my hesitation as well. Is
I made a vow in my life that I am never going to be the cause of anyone losing their job.
Yeah,
because I've been there.
Yeah, and without digging up a dictionary, I can't remember what the nuanced differences between sympathy and empathy, but I have one of them in spades. All right,
the other one you don't have at all. It's a
Yeah, but I got lucky in my life in that my first job was corporate. Never had to do food services. Never had to do retail. But being a fairly sympathetic or empathetic person, I understand a lot of what goes into those jobs. It's very hard work. There's a lot of demands. There's a lot of stress. And unfortunately, in many cases, there is not commensurate pay for it. Mm-hmm. And depending on the situation, maybe this is the best they can do at this moment in their life. Maybe it's what they want to do for a living. I don't know.
These guys are lazy bastards.
I call bullshit. And here's why.
I'm joking. He's not.
And here's why.
Yeah.
Take that exact situation. There was nothing that stopped that employee who was looking through Magic the Gathering cards to say, oh, I'm sorry, sir. Let me finish with this gentleman. I'll be with you in just a moment. Or to say the guy who's with the magic cards, because I know from personal experience that is a very labor-intensive process, to say, would you excuse me for a minute? I'll be right back. I'm going to go see if I can offer this gentleman some assistance.
Yep.
It takes just a couple minutes, just a little bit of being polite, being considerate about both parties. Yeah. And then
it's all about having the heads up.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then seeing that Chad's ready to check out, saying, hey, man, can you excuse me for a moment? It takes a minute, 2 minutes to ring Chad out, chat him up, bag up his stuff, catch him later. Yeah. Done is beautiful.
I was in retail for 7 years, and I find having been in retail for 7 years, I have no patience for bad service in a store because it doesn't take much.
Right.
Yes, you can get stressed and you can have a lot going on, but it's not that hard to provide the basic level of service.
That's why retail work should be compulsory for all teenagers to at least train them in the just how to be a human being.
I don't know.
Once you get
apparently not because I haven't worked those jobs and I've got the softest view.
Yeah, well, you know,
no, I'm with you, Dan.
I think I would tolerate anything shy of malice.
There was a story I have where I was with a friend of mine years and years ago. This was Dawn's ex-boyfriend, actually, and we went into like a Burger King or McDonald's or something. And you know how they switch the grill over at their cutoff for breakfast is 11 o'clock or whatever. We walk in there like 11:15 and he's like, okay, I want the bacon, egg, bacon, biscuit breakfast thing. She's like, oh, well, I'm sorry. It's a grill temperature. We stop breakfast service at 11 and we can't even make it for you because we changed the temperature on the grills and all this sort of stuff. I mean, she was just some little 16-year-old waif, right? And we were like these 20-year-old guys. And he starts laying into her. I mean, he's like, this is such bullshit and blah, blah, blah. And I can't believe it's only 11:15 and yada. And I look at him and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you seriously laying into her because you did not get your breakfast biscuit 15 minutes after they cut it off? You need to shut the fuck up. I mean, I got really angry at him.
Well, and that's something I have no patience for. I have no patience for people going off on somebody who's just answering a phone or is working behind a register.
Because I've been on the other side of it. I've been on the receiving end of that.
Maybe that's just where I need to cut a line. is
a dual line
and blow off up.
I've never done cocaine.
I understand it's a hell of a drug, but
I've done a number of different drugs in my time. I've never done cocaine.
Yeah, neither have I.
Totally haven't either.
But I'm boring. I haven't done anything.
But I'm too cheap, actually.
I have an anxiety disorder. I struggle with caffeine. I mean, no joke, cocaine would probably hospitalize me.
Sounds like an awesome party.
No, it does not. I have a lot more fun on Xanax than I would on coke. But anyway, so I think maybe that's where I need to draw the line, is I see people in retail and food services take a lot of battering for things they can't control, store policies, what the kitchen did wrong, so forth. And the difference is, in this situation, it was something that the person easily could have controlled. This was perfectly within their control and was not an unreasonable request. You know, like, I want you to change the grill temperature for me, or I want you to go against a store policy, or whatever. Because I know those people on the front line, and they take a lot of battering for stuff that they have no hand in. I mean, you go into
very little money.
Yeah, you go into a restaurant, and how the front table seated people, how the kitchen's cooking the food, what temperature it is in there, what music's playing, the waiter or waitress gets hammered for all of it. And it's simply not in their control.
All right. So from my perspective, because we're a very specialized retail niche, right? So my employees do control the temperature of the store. They do control what's playing on the TV. Yeah. They do control what music is being played. But the situation that, and for me, it's very, very simple. It boils down to, this employee committed the cardinal sin of what it is that we do in this industry, is he made the customer feel unwelcome. That the customer who was there, it didn't matter to the retail establishment that the customer was in the retail establishment. Whether he spends money or not is immaterial. It's about making him feel welcome and making him feel an important member of the game / comic community. Right. And so for me, that's why I have an issue with the employee, is because not only is he offended a member of the tribe, but he has taken the most valuable resource I have as a small business person, the consumer, and said, you know what? You just don't matter to me.
Yeah.
And that's a big, big deal in what we do.
Yeah.
If I wanted him personal, I'd go to Amazon.
Right. Because I can get it faster. I can get it cheaper.
Yeah. I want to ask you one other quick question on this topic, because it was sort of left as an unanswered question on the show, and it got a lot of discussion on the forums. We talked about the social aspect of going to a gaming shop. Now, for a moment, let's talk only about tabletop role players. Okay, we're not talking about wargamers. We're not talking about CCG players. We're not talking about comic book collectors.
Do they each have a different smell?
Or is it all fart and BO?
Well, there is definitely some crossover. So some of those smells have to combine.
That's true. But so, is that your no comment face?
Yeah, because each one of those is usually involved in at least one other thing. So can you tell when they come in how the smells blended?
For anyone who, for everyone who obviously can't see what's going on here, Brodor is that I want to answer your question, but to do so would be to violate my own cardinal rule I just gave.
I'm glad, though, that there is a paper towel right here, so the blood from biting my tongue is coming out of my mouth. I can sop it up like soup with bread.
All we really need to know is which of those groups has the best hygiene. Not if it's good.
No, but just the best.
The question that was getting kicked around on the forum is, given the fact that back in the 80s and 90s, if you wanted physical gaming products, you had to go to a bookstore or a game shop or a comic shop. You weren't going to find it anywhere else. But now that you can find the products in a variety of places, I know you guys are not in the business of trying to price match Amazon, because you're never going to win that price because they're undercutting the publishers.
Well, it's different customers.
Right. Well, and as someone who has products on Amazon in the form of Sojourn, I can tell you they're undercutting everybody in really unfair ways. And I don't want to get into a big thing on that. But I realize price wars is not your game. But what is it specifically that would attract me to a local gaming shop in an age where I could get the books somewhere else?
Free handies.
I mean, is
I'll drop a digit.
I mean, is it
the prostate? It's not that far.
It's like a little walnut.
If we go along homophones here, maybe you're adding a digit.
I can give you the easy answer for why I go to a store versus buying online.
Please.
Because I don't do a lot of buying online for gaming books and things. I want to see it. I want to feel it. I want to look through it and decide, is that what I really want?
Okay, window shopping. That's a fair answer. Yep. I mean, look, you're now one of the main speakers within the Gamma Trades.
Whoa. Let's back up on that. I only did one speech. I'm not a main speaker. I'm a peripheral. I only did one talk.
Say that on the show?
Yeah. No.
Because they just put you in charge of something.
No. Okay, so let me back up. All I did was get elected to the...
Time out. What is Gamma?
Okay, Gamma is the Game Manufacturers Association. Gamma is basically a trade group for people...
It's not a fan group.
No, it's not a fan group. It is a business group for people that write, publish, distribute, or sell things involved in tabletop gaming. Gotcha. I have been to what's called GTS, which is the Gamma Trade Show.
Again, not a fan
convention. It's not a fan convention. I got in there as press back a couple years ago.
He's also the main bad guy in Ninja Scroll. But go ahead, keep going.
But you just were telling me they've made you a...
Well, no. Okay, so here's what happened. I only did one talk.
Okay.
And then that talk went, dare I say, went really, really well.
Okay.
Did you drop trial?
But I got... So there are seven retailers that are members of what's called the Little Board, or the Gamma Retail Division Board, or the GRD. Mm-hmm. I was elected as one of those seven members this year to a two-year term on the Gamma Retail Division Board. So...
It's a star chamber.
Yeah, so I... Yes, the star chamber, exactly. Yeah, right next to Michael Douglas. But that's the level of influence that I have, is just I'm one of those seven guys that then reports to the main Gamma Retail Division Board, if that makes sense.
All right, well, fine. Whatever it is, you're something on some...
I just didn't want to... I didn't want to make it sound bigger than it was.
Okay, that you are the president of gaming.
So now that you have taken...
I am the king of games.
So now that you have taken Atkinson's job...
Yeah. He's the diet guy, right?
Yeah. Was.
Yes, the Atkinson diet, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Don't worry, fellow listener. I have no clue what they're talking about.
His diet is financial in that he takes all of your money by designing a card game or producing a card game.
I'll link Atkinson's profile. He's done a lot of things related to tabletop gaming.
Yes, I think you should do the Atkins diet as well. I know I could use it.
So what would you say the role is of a game shop to a tabletop gamer?
Well, that's a really complicated question to answer. And here's why. Just go back and listen to was it episode 366, Expectations?
Yes,
so 366. So go back and listen to that episode. Chad and Dan both want something different or expect something different from their game store.
Uh-huh.
I suspect that Wayne is yet a third opinion.
Yep.
Here's the situation for me. Ultimately, it's a business. Obviously, I care about the bottom line. It's about making money, and it's about the livelihood of myself, my employers, my employees, etc. But it's not about moving a particular product. It's not about, hey, we've got too many widgets this week. We overordered widgets. We need you to push widgets. We don't do commission-based sales, nothing like that. What I'm concerned about, as douchey as it sounds, is that my employees are an ambassador of the hobby. I'm not selling product. Mm-hmm. I'm selling the industry. So to your question, the tabletop role-playing gamer, what I want to have for that person is a reasonable selection of role-playing games, a reasonable amount of knowledge about those role-playing games, a venue where they can play those role-playing games, whether it's pickup games, open play, organized play, whatever. But more importantly, I want them to come into the store and feel a sense of community and that they can hang out with their friends there, that there's no judgment, that what they do as their hobby is perfectly acceptable, and that we're gamer geeks just like they are. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. Yeah. Now, whether that is the personalized touch service, the recommendation service, whether it's the, look, this customer knows way more about their specific avenue of the hobby than I'm ever going to know, and he wants me to get the hell out of his way and just take his money and be polite, I'll do that too. Mm-hmm. But the big umbrella is I want to have a sense of community for you where you can hang out and be with other people like you.
Yeah.
I think one of the cool things I've seen in a game store that I haven't seen in any other kind of store is I've seen employees before actually ask another customer to share their opinion on something.
We absolutely train our employees to do that.
And that's something I would have never expected, and I've never seen in any other retail environment. I've seen that once or twice before where you'll be in and someone will be asking about a product. It's like, you know what? Haven't played that. But Joe over here, he's a big player of that.
Let me be perfectly honest. Back in the day when we started our company, or should say when Dave started the company, there wasn't any place to buy this stuff except for from him or stores like his. But nowadays, not only are there 1,000 different products that you can get, but there's 10,000 different places to get those products. Mm-hmm. There's just too many options, both in terms of places to purchase and products to be purchased. I can't know everything, right? I can barely know a little bit about most of it, right? So engaging the clientele to help you in that customer service situation, it's absolutely something we do. And it's a win-win. That customer wants to talk about the product because they want to geek out. They want to be a member of the community. They're doing you a favor, which makes them feel good about themselves. And they know more about it than you do. So yeah, I absolutely encourage people.
And let's face it, if you tell me about a product, your store won't carry it.
well, please let me... it's totally true. It's totally true. But that's just my personal recommendation. Yeah,
three out of four times Brodor has recommended something to me. His store did not carry it.
But the whole philosophy that Brodor put forth there was that's essentially the business model of the family video store chain. And they've been able to buck that trend and are actually a growing chain of video stores as opposed to every other one that's gone out of business, Hollywood Video, Blockbuster, etc. Because their whole thing, their whole attitude is, A, of course, you know, being very, very friendly, making sure that the customer is engaged as soon as they walk in the door, but they really function on repeat business because, I mean, you can still essentially rent a relatively new movie there for a dollar, which is not a profitable business model, but they're built on repeat business. So if you give them a good experience every time and make them feel welcome, make them feel like this is a kind of a cool place to go because they're already kind of happy to be there in the first place because they want entertainment. So you enhance that experience by your treatment of them, then you're going to get them to continue to come back and rent more movies, maybe finally get a new one, which, you know, costs more than a buck, but you just keep on coming back and because you've had nothing but a good experience.
Don't they also have a huge backroom selection of porn?
Not very big.
At Family Video.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, in most of the stores, it is tucked away in the back. Now, it's not like the old school 80s style video stores where there was the curtain and everything, but you've got
to... I've never been to a porn
visible.
Store in the
80s. It's not readily visible.
Because I was a child.
So I do remember one of the stores, in the 80s when I was a kid that had a room, and it was a separate room with a door. Family videos, all the ones around here, those are pretty much... That section is gone because they've rented out half their store to pizza places and things.
Yeah, which they also own, by the way. So they've essentially now they've got those two businesses. If it's a Rocco's Pizza, they own that chain.
I do have to say they do something very cool that I would have loved back in the day when I was doing renting is they do delivery. You can call and have a pizza delivered with a movie.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Crap, I would have never left the house.
You can go in the store and you can order your pizza, look around for your movie, and then by the time you find your movie, you've only got to wait a few more minutes, and then you can take your movie and your pizza and out the door. You're done.
I'd like the Bourne Identity and a large pepperoni and mushroom pizza, and I'll give you an extra $10 if you pick up a 6-pack of beer for me.
We've become so fucking litigious as a society. They won't do that last part, and it
yeah,
sucks.
They will.
It's on the side.
Okay, I'm going to tell you guys a quick story, and then we'll get to today's other topic. But no, they will. I have a friend who used to work for years at, I think it was a Domino's, and his wife was actually the manager of that Domino's. So they both have a ton of stories. And
I bet they do.
Have you ever seen a receipt from a place and somewhere on the receipt are the three letters G-A-T, GAT?
Not to my
recollection. I have before, and I didn't know what it meant. What he told me that is they keep in their system, of course, you know, people order pizzas, they make a note of that or whatever, and that's a note left by an employee that stands for good ass tipper. And he said that with the GAT accounts, he said they would do anything. All the time, people would be like, hey, it's a Domino's, right? They'd be like, I want two pizzas, a 2-liter Pepsi, a 6-pack of beer, and a number three meal for McDonald's. And they would absolutely do it. And they would do that all the time. They'd stop at other restaurants. They'd stop at the grocery store. So long as these people treated them well.
Yeah.
So
pay for the beer and give them a tip on top of that.
Yeah, exactly. They would do all kinds of
free enterprise, baby.
Apparently, I'm a crappy tipper. I thought it was a good tipper. I am not a GAT account. That makes me a sad panda. So before we transition to the next topic, can I go back to one thing that Chad said, though?
Oh, crap.
No. So you were saying you were concerned about that person losing their job, and you don't want to be the person that causes them to lose their job. So let me flip it from this perspective. So that guy, you have a bad experience, and then another customer has a bad experience, and then another customer has a bad experience. Mm-hmm. And then eventually that razor thin profit margin that I have starts going into debt. And I go into more debt and more debt and more debt. And now I'm closing my doors and there's a bunch of people out of jobs.
Yeah.
So there's a balance somewhere there where if I don't know that a problem exists, I can't solve it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And add Chad's experience he shared with all of us. I haven't been going to that location very much anyway because I haven't been having great experiences. But now I'm not going to think about that store without remembering his experience.
Right.
And I'm just going to go to a fantasy shop instead.
And I hate to tell you this, Wayne, the fantasy shop is closer for both of us.
It is.
Why do we forsake our fantasy shop?
Because it is a bigger selection.
So let me. Oh, yeah. I mean, that place is it's amazing. They have great selection.
Mine was an impulse buy. I was driving by and I was thinking, poo, and I like drove right into it.
Have you seen there's a similar card game called Jizz.
Pat, okay. Pat, actually, right, today's topic.
You play one hand of it, then you have to wait about 10 to 15 minutes before you can play another hand.
That's right.
Do you see what's happened?
It's called a phase. It's called a refractory phase, so you have to wait.
Personally, I play one handed. I fall asleep.
You know, the individual rounds, they don't last that long.
The first round doesn't.
When I was 18, man, I could play that game again and again. Now that I'm 40, man.
You can play with strangers in most truck stops.
The sad thing is I've played it so many more times solo than I have as a two-player.
You know, I hate putting my game in the sleeves, though.
Amen.
So today's topic is one that we set up last time and I said I wanted to come back to. And so, damn it, we're coming back to it. And that topic is modules. We've actually talked quite a bit on and off about modules in the course of doing the, I don't know if you throw in bonus episodes, what, 450 episodes or something. This show's been around.
Pod fade.
But we've never really come back to them in detail. I want to talk a little bit about a defense of modules, because God knows we spend enough time bashing them. So I want to give
why am I on the show?
A defense of modules, and then also I want to give some talking points on how you can use them well. And
again, why am I on this episode?
Hey, I said what the topics were and took open. The only person I didn't tell was Brodor.
Yeah,
so he's the only one getting blindsided by this.
Do you like modules?
That's when I bring my A material, like my favorite card game, Jizz.
It is. I hate modules, but I love Jizz. A little side of poo.
Have you ever mixed those two?
Oh my God! You can use chocolate chips for poo and white chocolate chips for jizz. Oh my God.
The Cleveland edition of the game.
I get butterscotch chips because I've got gonorrhea.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey. I don't judge. But we're putting the cards in sleeves.
That's Rick Santorum's favorite game.
Sorry, Dan.
You have lost all control of your podcast.
So I got to give credit where credit is due as we kick this one off. The talking points that are in here are ones that I've had on my mind for a long time. But there's a forum user by the name of Cantor who did a really good job of putting these in a nice numbered list for me and really kind of consolidating these points down. In fact, I'm going to link Cantor's post in the show notes because, once again, I want to give credit where it's due for the organization of these particular talking points.
What, did you just throw a whole bunch of lists at him and he organized it? Do you have a secretary now?
No, I tell you, there's usually
can we
one.
Come to that?
There is one person on the forum who I swear if I die, this is who needs to take my place. Because every time he posts exactly what I would have said anyway, and that's Penguin Sushi, all right? So if I die, go find him.
Oh, great. He disagrees with me all the time.
Good.
Excellent.
Good.
Yeah, when Penguin Sushi posts, he highlights stuff in the post, and it's so helpful.
It's exactly. So very nice. It's so organized.
Makes it so easy to read. Right? Yeah.
But see, he's the guy that thinks most like me. And so this guy, I don't know what happened, but just a bit of plaque fell away from the virgin points in his brain or what happened. But he posted something exactly how I would have. And so we're just going to run with that. Thank you, Cantor.
Mm-hmm. Your relationship, the fact that you've been friends so long that you don't even like each other anymore, like that is what makes this work.
Our therapist disagrees.
He never does the dishes.
Dr. Holsworth doesn't see it that way.
I just want you to put the cap back on the toothpaste. Yeah. Don't you yes, dear me.
It just got real.
This is why we don't play jizz.
He wants to play poo. I want to play jizz. We never want to play at the same time.
All right, Chris, before I...
I'm dead. I'm washing my hair. I don't have any hair, goddammit.
I'm not even going to ask. I'm going to ask Chris a question. I'm not even going to ask Chris a question. All right, so there's a couple things that we've always kind of said and smack it on modules. One of them is the fact that we feel it kind of limits creativity. The other is that on the fly, you don't have as much room to maneuver as if you created your own content. And the third one is something Chad was talking about last episode, which is the plot is where you have an opportunity to create your own stuff, to add on to and to expand what's already there. But what I said on the previous episode is an absolute truth. It's not a subjective truth. This is an objective truth that one of the biggest complaints within the role-playing industry and one of the most common requests of role-playing game publishers is for more modules. It's for more material by which to run a game. And so just as I felt we were kind of doing a disservice to the audience if we had left that off of last episode, I think we're also doing something of a disservice by not at least talking about modules a little bit as a primary topic on the show.
So, Dan, I don't know if I've ever shared my opinion on modules because it has changed over time. I love them. I've never run one and I probably never will run them. But I love looking at how other people have put together a game plan and seeing, you know, what are the things they thought of, because that gives me ideas. I love looking at maps that other people have put together. I'm looking for what is the thought process that other people have put in so I can see where I can blatantly steal things. And modules always have pre-created characters that I can blatantly rip off and throw into my games as well. So yeah, it is a little bit of non-creativeness, but you're going to be influenced by things anyway. And I really like seeing how other people have thought to put this together. So I find them very useful, but I don't think I'd ever run one.
I think that back in the day, I mean like way, way back in the day, when Chris was still old, that modules, when you flip through them, because I've been to gaming stores where they have stacks and stacks, mm-hmm. So I've been to garage sales and whatnot, I've flipped through them and I've seen all the old ones. It is a map filled with treasures and monsters that goes from encounter to encounter to encounter. And people are like, oh, well, encounter can be role-playing, it could be a story. But in the modules, it was kill this guy, and then here's a trap, and then here is a speech that you read with box text that leads up to another fight, and that's all it was. But that's now that was back in the day.
Right, okay.
But it's changed quite a bit. I mean, there's a lot of fluff. There's a lot of story. Some of the story's good. Some of it's bad. There's a lot of characters, things to do.
When I look at the modules I like versus what I don't like and how things are put together, I think a perfect example of a module that I feel is very well done, Blood Moon Goblins. There is map, there are characters. He gives you a full module of you can go through these stories, but
it's a weird mix of
there's
a
story
module and
setting.
A setting.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I want out of a module, is I want all of that together.
Yeah.
I ran Blood Moon Bard, so it wasn't quite Blood Moon Goblins, but...
Well, and that right there, I think, is something that I would like to see more out of modules. And this isn't on the list that I have, but it's a great point. I think there are ways they could make modules more useful and more attractive to people like us that prefer to make our own material, which would be, in addition to having the pre-written plot and all that stuff, to also have a lot of resources... Not scattered throughout the module, but organized in such a way that you could use the module as a quick reference for some of those items. And so, Wayne, I completely agree with you that that is something I would like to see more of out of a module, even if I'm not going to run the module.
So aren't those really what you're describing, Dan? Aren't those really more like the, what do they call them, splat books or whatever, the like the supplement books that here's Region X, and here's the political breakdown of Region X, and here's the major NPCs of Region X, and they talk about what they're doing and what they want to do. And so all of those potential, they're all implied hooks. This kind of stuff can go forward. It's not a structured adventure.
For me, the difference between a module and a splat book, there's a couple differences. One of them is the amount of information. A module is a small amount of information that's easy to process. You can read through quickly. A splat book is usually bigger. That's one difference. A splat book typically has new classes, new things like that. If it's just a setting one, it has a lot of either prose or encyclopedic type entries, versus a module has a different variety of things.
Well, and something I also want to make clear is I realize in some way I'm contradicting something I said in the last episode, which is that I would like information to be more consolidated, to be more easily referenced, to not be spread across 15 different books. And so by saying, well, they should put more add-ons in modules, I'm kind of contradicting that, and I totally admit that.
Using Pathfinder as an example, one of the things that frustrates me is when I play Pathfinder now, I almost always play it off of an app.
Yeah, oh yeah, where did that spell come from?
That's exactly it. You can't keep track of where it came from, even in just the couple of core books. But I want those extra books because when you start off with like five classes, you get bored with them really quickly.
Well, and I may be barking up the wrong tree here, because what I'm trying to think of is things that would attract someone like me to a module. What would motivate me to pick one up? And it's also possible to be easier to say, look, I'm just not the intended customer. And so maybe really gearing it towards me is kind of, in a way, screwing over or shortchanging the intended customer. But Chris, I think the distinction I draw on what you're talking about is what you're describing in terms of like setting information and the things that throws, that gives you implicit plot. You know, that gives you these kind of ideas you might be able to build off of, but there's really no explicit plot there. It's not like, okay, well, this person's here and they're kind of weird, and therefore these events will happen that the players are involved in. You know, that information's not fleshed out. And yeah, I've certainly gotten plot ideas by flipping through setting books. But once again, that's really just more inspiration. That's not an actual explicit plot, much less anything that's statted out, mapped out, or usable as a reference to running any kind of actual plot.
I hate buying more than one book for a game.
Yet we look at Pathfinder, and I don't think I've ever seen you play one of the core classes. You've always done one from an extra book. You haven't bought the book, though.
Online, yeah.
Exactly. You haven't bought the
wiki or something.
We've either got the other books or you've got it online.
Well, and the only reason I do that is because
the core classes are boring at this point?
No, not necessarily. It's just a matter of class systems are kind of boring at this point, and I would rather make my own, and I assume that there is a system in Pathfinder for making your own. My experience from D&D back in the day is that's a really clunky sort of thing to do. It doesn't work very well. Obviously, I am totally unfamiliar with it in Pathfinder, so it might be the greatest thing ever or not even exist. But
even if it was really well done, it's not something I think you would enjoy, because you have to look up a lot. You'd have to do a lot of the math for it. And
math doesn't scare me. I just find it boring.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's not something you would enjoy. Mm. It's something you'd be capable of doing, but I don't think you would enjoy it, because having to pick all the math for it, pick all of this, I think you would find it really boring.
Yeah. Well, and for me, the enjoyment of the character has nothing to do with the mechanics of the character. If
what?
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I know.
I'm totally with you on that, Chad. It has everything to do with what you do with that character and that background and that personality.
And actually, the past two or three Pathfinder characters I've played, I have outsourced the creation of the character. I've created the story, who he is, his background, all the fluff, and I have gone to other people who are quite a bit better than me. I've taken, this is who I'm playing and what I want to play. Can you make an optimized character for the system? There's somebody on the forums, Azri Vep. I told him what I wanted to play. He made this excellent alchemist for me. I mean, it was just really awesome. And it wasn't like combat killing machine. It was like, okay, you want A, B, and C, and I'm reading X, Y, and Z in your write-up. I'm going to make this and do really well in combat, and he'll still fit with what you want, and he'll be fun to play. You have all these buttons and options which you like.
Right. Well, I don't want to get too hung up on the splat book angle, because a pseudo splat book is a role that a module can play, but obviously it's not the primary purpose of a module. Well, let's run down some things that are the primary roles of a module. First of all,
making money.
Well, okay, let's run down the non-cynical list of things that a module does.
Tax write-off.
Which is, first of all, the GM simply does not have the time to come up with a game plot. They're under a lot of crunch. Maybe for them, it might be a fairly rules-heavy system. They don't do all without notes, whatever the case is. But it's a lack of time. You can grab a module, thumb through it, you're pretty much ready to go.
And there are different people at different levels. Chad, you can sit down with no game prep whatsoever and just run a game without even a system. Mm-hmm. I can sit down without game prep, and I can BS it, and people won't know that I had none for a session. But there are other people that if they sit down and they haven't planned it out, they freeze up. I've talked to a lot of people like that.
I sat down with a guy at the table once, and it was the first game I was running for him, and it was the first game, and I had nothing. Right. I didn't even have dice. I didn't have pencil, paper. He's like, where are your notes or books? I'm like, I don't really do that. And he's like, you're making me really nervous. And I said, would you feel better if I had a piece of paper in front of me? He's like, yes. So I ripped a blank piece of paper out of a notebook and I set it in front of me. He's like, that actually really does make me feel better. I'm like, okay, hey, I'm here to serve.
There is a false dilemma or false dichotomy that I think we have implied on this show a lot that I personally don't believe exists. And I don't know that at any point in the history we've ever come out and said this, but I just think it's something we've kind of hinted around, which is you are either creative or you are non-participatory.
Oh, that's not true.
Exactly. That's not true. And I agree it's not true, but I think in some ways we've implied it. And one of the things that a module helps with is there is that middle class of player that wants to participate, but creativity is not their thing. It's the same thing we talk about when we debate social skills.
I have never created a movie in my life, yet I consume them with abandon.
Right, absolutely. And maybe movies aren't the best reference point because it's pure consumption. It's mm-hmm. passive consumption. But I believe you can absolutely participate and actively do so in a role-playing game without having an emphasis upon the creative aspects of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do establish settings for that reason. They don't want to create the setting, or that's just not what they enjoy about running a
game. Exactly. They don't enjoy it. Maybe because of the hardwiring of their brain, they're not that good at it. Maybe they don't have time for it. Maybe they're at a point in their life where they're just burned out on a lot of things and don't have the psychological or emotional bandwidth for it. And that's not a bad thing. You know, I think it doesn't get a lot of airtime within this group because of the fact that we are generally all creative people, and creativity is a huge thing that we enjoy.
I like to think of myself as a creative person, and I, like many of you, have never run a module before, but the guy Wayne's talking about, I'm that guy. When I ran Mathfinder, I can't take credit for that. There's another podcast that I heard that on, and a guy called it Mathfinder. I was like, dude, I'm in. Like, forever, that's what the game is.
Stepping out and listening to other podcasts.
Well, yeah.
Shopping at other stores.
Yeah, no doubt, right? Look, let me tell you about shopping at other stores, right? Everybody's coming back to McDonald's. You can go to Taco Bell. That's cool. But I know you need that Big Mac, baby. I know you're coming back to McDonald's. But what I was going to say is I'm that guy, right? I want to use the Galarian, right? I want to use the official Mathfinder campaign setting. Not because I don't have the creative inclination, but there's a certain level of effort that I don't have the time to do. And I think modules are exactly that for some people, that maybe that they don't have the creative bent. But more importantly, I think that a lot of people, they just don't have the time, and they want somebody to have written the adventure for them.
What podcast did you hear that on?
It's called Gamers Table.
I've listened to some of their actual plays, but not their regular podcast.
I was going to say, if we're going to steal from somebody, we might as well at least give credit. So.
Oh, sure.
They're a bunch of jerks. I don't know. Everybody was saying how great they are.
Actually, coincidentally, Dan from that show is the only person on the show that I have had more than one sort of passing interaction with. Right. Very, very nice guys. Yeah,
they're some pretty good at actual plays. I listened to their
Masterminds one. Not to sit here and play jizz on Gamers Table, but their actual plays, honestly, they're... one of the two
we
best
need to get
ones
you on for
there.
An actual play of that now, so Chris can jizz on gamers' table.
Actually, that's the thing.
Still jizz on Fear the Boot.
Don't jizz on another podcast.
In full disclosure, I actually was in one of their actual plays because they hit us up to do voiceover work for it. They hit up a bunch of the hosts to do it, and I said, sure, why not?
I don't know if you know this, Broder. We're kind of big names in podcasts.
I'm kind of a big deal.
I do know that you guys are a big deal. That's why I'm always so flattered when you ask me to be on the show.
We all sit in rich Corinthian leather chairs.
And by the way,
you have no idea how funny that actually is, Chris.
We're going to do a bonus episode on these god-awful Iron Maiden chairs that Dan cheaps out and makes us sit on. You have no idea the number of times that when we go out to dinner, we pass like a Target or something, and I'm like, no, pull over. I'm buying me a Fear the Boot chair that is going to sit in your house. Only I can sit in it. Okay. I'm going to sue you for neck injuries. I walk away. All right.
So this is probably, this episode's so bloated, it's probably going to be a two-parter, so I'll just keep rolling with it. But then I am going to get back to f***ing modules.
I'm going to hit you with this f***ing folding chair, you know, Hulk Hogan style. You know, God damn it.
You know there's a Tumblr out there called This Is Thin Privilege?
Yes.
I'm going to start one called This Is Fat Privilege. Because I'm not making this up. All right, so did you see on Facebook about a week and a half ago, I put on there that I was in a Mexican restaurant drinking a Merlot listening to Piano Man. It was this really surreal sort of thing.
Yes.
They had me sitting.
Wasn't
this,
it like Chilean? Anyway.
No. It's a Mexican place. But they had me sitting in this wooden chair with no padding. Mm-hmm. And they were really crowded. So service and paying also was kind of slow. So we were in there a long time.
You didn't
a
call week, up Brodor to yell so he can yell at their manager for you?
A week and a half later, my pelvis still hurts.
That has nothing to do with the
that
Mexican
was,
restaurant.
That was the roofie.
No, because it's not my butthole. It's like right on the side of the pelvis.
Wait. You gotta, okay. Everybody who's listening to this, play it back and listen to how tentatively he said, it's not my butthole.
So, all right. Next point. Cantor, thank you for contributing to this show. Wayne, this is similar to something you were saying. Not everyone's a professional game designer.
I am.
Well, yes, you're award-winning.
Award-winning. I'm not professional.
You're not
professional. I don't get paid
for it. Yeah,
you've
never been paid.
But I'm award-winning.
But you're an award-winning.
Yes.
In a math-heavy system, it could be something like encounter balancing. In something that's not a math-heavy system, it could just be something like, hey, coming up with fun plot ideas or interesting locations to visit or whatever. But there are people out there who have made a profession out of designing and balancing adventures. And, you know, Chad, to your point earlier, certainly a lot of adventure modules, D&D in particular, it is just dungeons to clear.
Yeah. Room to room to room.
But I have seen ones that aren't that way. For example, there are two modules that I own for Battletech. One is Prometheus Unchained or Prometheus Unbound. I forget its exact name. And the other, I think, is called Null Set. Neither of them are big dungeons, because obviously that's not how you play Battletech. They're mech warrior, person-to-person level adventures.
Null said, if I'm not mistaken, had a lot of like intrigue in it, a lot of politics. There was a mystery. There was some backstabbing in it, a lot of characters.
As did Prometheus.
A lot of the ones I own are for like Silver Age Sentinels or Mutants and Masterminds, and they're definitely not dungeon crawls. They're whole cities and teams, and there are encounters and things, but it is the evil plots are in there, and there's a lot more investigation in those than there are in, say, ones I've seen for Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
Shadowrun modules were very much like that as well. Got you going on the initial adventure, but the order with which you dealt with those encounters or how you dealt with those encounters was really up to, specifically up to players. There wasn't a whole lot of railroading that would go on. It was just, here's this encounter, here's this encounter, here's this encounter. And it did have, there were brief notes about, you know, if the characters have already done this particular encounter, then this might happen, you know, to kind of give you a little bit of guidelines. But otherwise, it kind of left things a little wide open.
I think Chris made a really good point while we were in the middle of that most recent brief pause, and that you were saying, Chris, that to you, modules were like boxes of brownie mix.
It's like a, it is. It's like brownies. You can make brownies from scratch. You can do it the Chad way, and you can just make your brownies from scratch, and they might be very fulfilling for you. You might really enjoy them. A lot of people will take the box of brownie mix off the shelf in the grocery store, go home and make completely fine brownies. And what's nice about those is that you can add things to that brownie mix and make it kind of how you prefer to make it. Or you can get two boxes and make really thick, moist, juicy brownies. And
it's, can you say moist one more time?
No.
Moist, juicy.
No, I was actually going to build... I'm sorry, Chris.
Modules are kind of like essentially like this base box of ingredients that you can build off of, and you can create something that's more than what's actually in the box. Or you, if you want, you can just stick with what's in the box and still be satisfied with it.
You know, that was my advice for people that use modules. As someone who has run a few, and that's not my typical way of game, I have run a couple. I generally hate writing in books. I'm one of those people, I do not freaking write in my books. It always drives me nuts when people want me to do it for some reason, except modules. Every module I've run, I've read it. You got to know the material because, right, if you deviate somewhere in the middle and you deviate heavily, there may no be getting back on those rails, depending on how you came off of it. And so you've got to know the material.
Or be comfortable not going back to the rails.
Or well, yeah, and that's fine, too. That's perfectly fine, too. If all you need a module for is a running start, that's perfectly fine, too.
Because yeah, we talked many times about how hard that first game session is. I never thought about it, but a module might be a...
Yeah, run it for three or four pages and then put it aside.
Exactly. Just as a... If I'm really bad at starting and doing game session one, that might be an option to just take the stress off of
but
it.
But that's a big thing, is know the material. I recommend writing some notes in there, shorthand a few things so you're not just reading verbatim off of it all. If you can, especially with this box text, try to underline a few key words or key points. That way you can improv your own speech while still hitting all the major points. Another thing that allows you to do is, let's say they find a key and you can't remember what door that goes to. If you underline key in both places, it helps you to find it. And so if you notice key terms in there that might be important later, that's a great way to make the book a little more accessible for how you're going to use it.
Do people still use paper modules?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, like, isn't it just be PDFs and you can highlight things and search terms and have...
Whoa. Some of us still sell print material.
Sorry. The internet, it doesn't exist.
So my wife has a book called The Cake Doctor, and it's all about taking boxed cake stuff, you know, pre-mixed cake boxes from your grocery store shelf
and making
making methamphetamine. That's why I'm chubby, but all the meth. But no, my point is that I wonder if someone out there could do a book like The Module Doctor, where this is what we're going to do. Here are tips and tricks and trades that if you're going to run modules, here are some things that we would recommend to doctor up the module or to doctor up the game experience.
Well, Dan, I use modules for another reason that we haven't hit on. I use them to learn systems. So if I'm going into a system that is crunchy that I'm not familiar with and I'm trying to learn it, I can grab a module and see how they made their NPCs. I can see how they put things together, how they did a balance. I can do just a little bit of rolling with the characters on there and see how they fit.
I can also go online and find that too.
You can, but sometimes it's better to have it from the game creators.
You know what? When Satan's Death Cult finally hits us with an EMP and there is no internet for you to go to,
where am I going to get my gaming supplies?
Precisely.
Not at the fancy shop. I'll go to bad service shop and get ignored. And I'll be like, damn you, Death Cult! See, and if only there was another store, that Brodor's outside the window with a single tear on his cheek.
And he's the only person in the entire movie that's in color. Yeah.
the bad sales associate at the store, whenever he opens his mouth, no words come out, just static. Oh my god. So, Chad, I'd watch this movie.
Yeah, me too. I'd watch like, this like Mad Max, but it's completely gaming centric instead of gasoline centric. That would be I wanna play this game. You know what? Fear the Con 8, you tell me system.
So another point Cantor raised, and this one I have Matt props on, because all the other ones, like I said, he gave some organization, but Artie was having the same thoughts. This one I had not thought of. he said that it's kind of cool to have the shared experience. That when you go out and talk to other gamers, there's the possibility that they have also been through the same plot, and you can kind of compare notes. Like we've seen this at Fear the Con, where let's say somebody's running the same game in two different slots, and then afterward it's really neat for the groups to get together and talk about the different ways they dealt with the same situation and how differently the games turned out. Well, a module theoretically creates that kind of note comparison ability across a much broader swath of gamers. Now, Wayne, in Mathfinder Society, has this ever come up?
Oh, yeah. We've talked about different modules we've gone through, different experiences with it. And it, yeah,
it was huge at Living Greyhawk back in the day.
Yeah, it definitely comes up in that type of thing. And then you look through and say, well, have we done this one yet? You want to play this module before you do that one because you get keys to the story in the other one.
But yeah, just be able to sit down and both of you guys have played through Legend of the Ass Smacker or whatever. And
it's a great series.
I have completely changed my mind on modules now. I never knew.
You just watch out for members of the Red Hand Society.
Yes, in the villain, the Glazer.
So, I'm going to go cry while you guys go unsubscribe from our show.
Why do I feel like this was what happens when I'm on the show?
Because it is.
Because it does.
And we're not even drinking.
I know, right?
You know?
Yeah, we went to friggin' Lion's Choice, which is like a slightly nicer Arby's.
It's way better than Arby's.
Hey, preach on, brother.
Yeah, well, it is the best roast beef sandwich.
I'm just trying
to
get a frame of reference because my understanding that's a local chain. No.
Arby's.
I've never been to Lion's Choice.
Yeah, Lion's Choice is a local thing.
Yeah.
And if you only have Arby's where you live, that's some tough shit, man.
So, anyways, modules, I don't know if we'll ever come back to them again because I don't think it's
appropriate. This is
like, yeah, well, you know, it's just, I don't think I'm going to get much out of it because it's like playing Pitfall. The treasure may be great, but if you look at the areas, it's really worthwhile. Do you really want to have to jump across three alligator heads to, like, get some silver bar that no human
being
should
drive
carry
me crazy.
Anyway.
I would, after five minutes, I'd have to quit and play Star Monster.
I feel bad.
Well, and the amusing thing is, the landmine you went through for this, and the first product that was released for money, self-published by a Fear the Boot host, was essentially a module. Blood Moon Goblins.
That's more of a setting book with an adventure within it. I mean, they're kind of wrapped around
each
other.
It's a really good module.
That's a module.
Or it's a really excellent setting book.
I think that if we wade through all of the filth, I think that we've come up with a couple of things. Modules are good for people who are new to a game. Modules are good for people who want to learn about a game. Modules are good for people who are looking for inspiration. Modules are good for someone who does not have the time or the inclination to do the work.
Modules are good for rolling up and slapping Chad in the head.
He suddenly like turned into the Rain Man of our podcast.
I know, it's amazing. I'm just sitting here entranced by it all.
Do you like a fugue state? Is this like the other person in your head?
No, it is.
I'm only switched over
to game salesman.
All right. So here's what happened.
This is salesman Brodor.
I realized this was the last Fear the Boot episode I was going to be on. I thought that it was salvageable because I realized that the first time I'd ever heard on Fear the Boot a warning about content, it was an episode that I was on. Only one of three negative episodes I was on. The only time you filmed in the dark because I'm so disgusting. You don't want to look at my fat Quato looking face. You know, it was me.
You are what you do, Quaid.
I saw the writing on the wall, so I just thought I'd bring a little value add to it.
Wow. So you just want like 5 years from now when we're doing Fear the Boot on mind gyms, transmitting it to people's minds. You just want somebody to say, whatever happened to that Brodor? Last thing I remember, he was really on top of that episode.
Really?
I only remember the gist.
It's like the ending of a movie. The movie can be really, really good, but till the end, they shank the ending. You walk away not caring about the film. Yeah. I just thought I would nail the landing on this one.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Like whoever it was that landed on that broken ankle that I always think was Mary Lou Retton, was it?
No, it was Carrie Strug.
Thank you. So, anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2015. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.
Chris was actually making a really, really good point.
Recorded it. Of course, when Dan isn't around.
No, he made a really, really good point. I think you should repeat it.
Yeah, this is like Snuffleupagus in the 80s.
No, he didn't. He's not real. He's not even on the show, you silly gamers.
This is our first Fear the Boot entirely in the dark.
I think so.
And I like it.
Yeah.
I dig it.